How'd you sleep last night?
Well, I slept really, really well last night, if briefly, but my sleep pattern got interrupted early in the spring, in March, by waiting for a mare to give birth, who was a full sister to a mare who had given birth 2 weeks early a year ago. And because horses tend to be similar to one another, I mean, she's a full sister, she may be coming up, she may be having a baby early already. So I started watching her 2 weeks early. She didn't give birth until a week later, so there was 3 weeks of sleep deprivation that was unnecessary to begin with. And then I had to go through the other four that were being born and so forth. So, I had that chair over here by the window so I could look out at the barn, you know, and I have full cameras and so forth. But it,
full cameras? Yeah. You know, cameras in the stable?
There are cameras in the barn that I can see and tell what's going on in there.
This is quite an investment that you have.
Yeah. Well, you want, I mean, baby horses are, I mean, if you're a breeder of horses, then getting a live baby horse is really important. I lost one once, and it's very difficult. An old friend of mine said he had seven this year and lost three. That must be really difficult. I mean, losing one was bad enough. I don't ever want to lose another one.
You have 18.
Horses, yes, sir. 18 yeah. Horses.
How long have you been doing this?
Well, I've been doing it this time around. I'm going on 9 years at this point. But I went 48 years without having any horses. I had horses when I was in high school. And then we lost our ranch and had to sell everything at auction, and that included all my horses.
What was the event? Was it just the economy that forced that?
Well, it was the economy and the social deprivation of amalgamation of industrial farming, putting people off the land.
The big farms, the big agricultural concerns were coming in and finding excuses to get rid of people, small farmers.
Well, they were doing that, but I mean, a lot of the enormous farms in this country in California were like encomiendas, haciendas that came from the Spanish system, like some guy named Henry Miller, not their author. Somebody had a farm or had ranches the size of this county in California. Speaking of big farms, there's one out west of town here called the Hudson Bay Farm.
What a shitty name to begin with.
what was interesting about it's operated by a couple of brothers who are friends of mine, attorneys, and they still have the nucleus of this place. But when Hudson's Bay used to run this part of the country, that ranch extended from over there all the way out to the Columbia River at the Wallula Gap, south to the Umatilla, all the way back to the Snake. It was a big horse ranch for the Hudson Bay fur trappers.
Yeah. The first real colonizers of this continent.
Yeah, they were here.
Yeah.
Fur guys.
You know, their motto is pro pelli cutum, which means a skin for a skin. Isn't that interesting?
Pro pelli cutum.
Tell us about how this book, Coyote Highway, came into being.
Well, I asked my publisher, Bree, if she would do it, and she said yes.
Bree is?
Bree, her last name was Bodner, but she's divorced and Mr. Bodner has passed away. Bree is a poet and an artist from Cleveland who was an admirer of my memoir, Valga Cruza. I met her not quite 20 years ago, maybe 18 years ago in Cleveland. And she worked at a bookstore, and she's a writer, very good one, very peripatetic, energetic. She's kind of like I don't want to mischaracterize either one, but a female version of D.A. Levy in Cleveland. And she has lots of friends, lots of supporters. She moved to Kentucky. And anyway, the book, she did my previous book, both of my previous books, Pilgrim and Martel and The Source. And this, I think, was published by Lise Bittern, or one of them was done by Lise Bittern.
Lise Bittern, that's this one, yeah.
And the Green Panda Press. So.
I would love it if you could read the title poem.
I'll give it a go. I don't know that I've ever actually read it out loud to anybody.
Take your time.
Coyote Highway for Amalio Madueno. The baby coyote scampering across the road in front of me and into the wheat fields, eternal coyote grin of the hanging tongue I imagined on his face, on her face. A coyote has two faces. So too the road going both directions and nowhere simultaneously. Janus and dramatic, the happy and the sad, bisexual and two-sexual, scampering sin embargo. Nevertheless, there should always have been an embargo on sin. We have coyotes to thank for making it stick. Nevertheless, time has found my tongue hanging on a key signature, making it stick on frozen steel. A few days before the Blue Creek fire, the coyote pup got ran over, almost exactly where I'd seen it cross a few days earlier in the Janus in July crunch, signifying both the beginning and the end. For the rest of the summer, I've watched the coyote's tiny fur-bearing body get impressed flatter and flattest into the pavement, making it stick, flatter than your father and mine, both of them and all others becoming a coyote grease spot with hair. Over time, by the overbearing weight of the wheels of 100 fire trucks coming and going after the Blue Creek fire, driven relentlessly by overdressed, fireproof Department of Natural Resource men, mostly pretending to be fighting fire, snared in a stronger force by orders of magnitude they were really fighting and losing to inertia. 2. The fire bifurcated my life into before the fire and after the fire. Before the fire, the coyote's body sang in its sleep, the howling vocal cords of my signature yearning to merge with the magnificent tempo of geologic time. After the fire, which was a month ago and feels like many years, the coyote is wearing out his welcome to the pavement beyond the crushed paw of Lorca's kitten in New York. The intermittent grease stain of the coyote surrendering and rendering its fat to the artificial rubber of its meeting with the road, I too disappear in stains, one revolution after another imprinted on the road. Every tire takes an image of me around and around the Mill Creek Road to Walla Walla, Blue Creek, a burned out memory, tributary to what now? Houses, trees, buildings, grass, several thousand acres that used to belong to me, my friends and the animals, 1,000 acres of my own pine and fir destroyed by a careless wheat farmer exporting topsoil. This coyote is not starving. No Nezwa coyote in Nahuatl. This coyote is extinct, extinguished temporarily by industrial strength transportation. Nevertheless, sin embargo, the coyote is stronger than death, and despite its disappearing act, will outlive the road. 3. I did not expect to be impressed this way, molecule by molecule into the asphalt, spread out in the summer heat. I have no idea what happened. I don't know what hit me. Suddenly everything was a blur of blood and pain. I am now the watchman of this road. I couldn't get up if I wanted to. I don't have a leg to stand on. I can't tell you how much this means to me. I don't believe anything anymore. With my mouth mashed down into the asphalt, it's hard enough to spit cliches out sideways. You'd find it difficult too if you no longer had any teeth. But I've been thinking about it. Dead as a coyote nailed, I have something to tell you that has waited 70 years of summer. You can't get off this road. The semi-royal road to ruin, non-parallel to the King's Highway, the road to Cibola, El Camino Unreal, Coyote Highway. 4. If you follow the Blue Creek Road far enough, you come to a black forest resembling pages ripped off Cormac McCarthy's The Road. Every tank of gas, every bag of groceries, every text is taken up with futility. It's all going to burn. I at least have become a permanent resident. Not a citizen exactly. I never felt like I belonged here. So I took up residence both above and below the law, alien by birth in my own time and country. While I was gone, the rains came, and for a while seemed to loosen my grease into the aggregate, nourishing the nearby weeds. Since I can't get over it, I have to rise above it to reassert my claim on the philosophic kingdom. My great uncle Neza set the standard. A search for correlatives, objective and otherwise. If a weed is a plant out of place, what then is an animal out of place but an orphan of philosophy? I am too short to trespass. My corpus delicti, completely committed to a body, still missing, but still counting up the crimes. A formerly fur-bearing weed speaks right into the mic. You can't let me any farther down.
Holy shit, Charles. We have to find out about a devastating fire by reading your fucking poems. I mean, that's crazy. You know, most people are putting their goddamn dinner photos on Facebook, and we have to learn about a fire by reading your poem. And in such an amazingly beautiful way. I mean, you know, I'm not one to share my tragedies, making them public. Yeah, I'm not that kind of guy either. Right. You know, it's like, fuck, I'll suffer through it.
Right.
But I mean, you have a heart attack, you have a fire that destroys your whole fucking ranch, and when I find out is when I start reading your book.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of that is, I'm naturally fairly discreet about that stuff. I used to write a lot of personal, public.
Dalga Cruz is an example.
Yes. You know, if that book didn't teach me anything, it was to keep my mouth shut.
You got that out of your system 50 years ago.
I did. It was good in many, many ways. And for many years, I would hand copies of that to youngsters and say, this is a cautionary tale. If you can't find at least 10 things in here that you should never do, then you haven't read it correctly.
Yeah.
And then there's the other part of that, which is as they're advising some of the malcreants in public office at this days, you know, you really should stop talking if you're about to go to court. And the first attorneys I had representing me and some of the other plaintiffs in this fire said, don't talk about it. Don't. And so I wasn't planning on doing it anyway, although there are some things that I would like to bring up.